Welcome to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Moscow's mayor slams pride as propaganda, Kentucky Baptist legal victory stirs faith-based discrimination fears, and marriage-minded British Columbia couples get their days in court. Those stories and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Cindy Friedman.
And I'm Brian Nunes.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending July 28, 2001. Moscow's city government this week refused to issue a permit for a gay and lesbian pride parade. A number of groups had made requests, including the organizers of Berlin's huge annual Love Parade. According to Moscow's press service, Mayor Yuri Lushkov stated that the city government will not allow holding this march because such demonstrations outrage the majority of the capital's population, are in effect propaganda of dissipation, and force upon society unacceptable norms of behavior. He added that homosexuality goes against the traditional moral values of most Russians, as well as the canons of the main religious confessions in this city. The announcement comes in the wake of a series of police raids on gay venues in Moscow, although Russia's sodomy law was repealed in 1993.
But in Australia, Victoria's State Police Chief Commissioner Christine Nixon announced she will be joining the contingent of gay and lesbian officers in Melbourne's Gay Pride March in January. She'll be the first senior officer in Australia ever to lead the police contingent in a Pride March. Nixon said she wanted to support those officers, calling them incredibly alienated, and added that, "I'm determined to support all members of Victoria Police and provide encouragement and leadership to ensure that all members are recognized and valued across the organization." Nixon is allowing the officers to dress in uniforms at Pride for the first time, and even said she was considering issuing a formal apology to gay and lesbian officers whose careers have been damaged by homophobia. Although her Pride plans are supported by Victorian Premier Steve Brax of the Labour Party, leaders of the state's opposition parties were highly critical.
In Pride news from Canada, British Columbia's new Premier Gordon Campbell this week issued an official proclamation of Vancouver's Gay and Lesbian Pride Day, August 5th. But the Canadian province's new Liberal Party government, which last week dropped its new Democratic Party predecessor's landmark lawsuit seeking equal marriage rights for gays and lesbians, further disappointed activists this week by dismissing the province's Gay Supportive Human Rights Commissioner, Mary Wu Sims. Sims had expected to be allowed to complete her term, which would have run through March.
In Hungary, a Budapest district mayor's attempt to block lesbian, gay, trans, and feminist groups from exhibiting at the huge Pepsi Island Youth Music Festival continues to stir controversy. This week, a court formally suspended the anti-gay clause that District Mayor István Tarlós had inserted in his third district's contract with the festival, saying it was unconstitutional. Four groups scheduled to exhibit at the festival will have a hearing for their full civil lawsuit against the mayor on August 1st, a case they hope will prevent police interference at the festival. Festival organizers had already decided not to honor the clause. The festival's top sponsor, Pepsi Cola Hungary, finally made a statement relating to the issue this week, emphasizing that it has no control over festival activities, but saying, "Pepsi respects the multicultural nature of the event and believes that it should be something that everybody can enjoy." The mayor of the city of Budapest also issued a statement that legally registered civil organizations are constitutionally entitled to be represented at public events.
In the U.S., a California judge gave an unprecedented go-ahead to a San Francisco lesbian's lawsuit in the widely reported dog-mauling death of her life partner. California law gives only legally married spouses and blood kin the right to file lawsuits for the wrongful death of a spouse or relative. But Superior Court Judge James Robertson said that standing should be extended to lesbian and gay couples because they are denied legal marriage. He cited the state constitution's guarantee of equal protection under the law. Sharon Smith, the surviving partner of Diane Whipple, said, "Diane and I planned to spend the rest of our lives together. We would have been legally married if we could have been." Smith's attorney, Shannon Minter of the National Center for Lesbian Rights, said, This is the first time that a court anywhere, not just in California, but anywhere in the entire country, has held that a surviving lesbian or gay spouse has the right to go forward with a wrongful death suit. It's a tremendous victory for lesbian and gay people in the United States. The lawsuit is expected to go to trial in a few months. The California state legislature is currently considering a bill that would extend the right to file wrongful death lawsuits, among others, to registered domestic partners.
In Virginia, Ronald Gay was given 4 consecutive life terms for killing open gay Danny Overstreet and wounding 6 others when he opened fire in a gay-friendly Roanoke bar in September. Gay had pleaded guilty to first-degree murder and 6 counts of malicious wounding. He may be eligible for geriatric parole in 10 years when he reaches age 65, but state prosecutors have vowed to keep him incarcerated unless he's in very poor health. Gay, a Vietnam veteran, had been declared by the Army to be completely disabled by post-traumatic stress disorder. Although his defenders attributed his actions to mental illness, the notorious shooting at the Backstreet Cafe was widely viewed as an anti-gay hate crime. It sparked a series of demonstrations and was cited in lobbying for state and federal laws against homophobic bias crimes.
The Federal Hate Crimes Bill, now known as the Local Law Enforcement Enhancement Act, S-625, passed a Senate committee this week and may come to a floor vote in October. A majority of the members of the Democrat-controlled Senate have signed on as co-sponsors of the bill. But the Republican leadership in the House have indicated they will not allow the bill to come to the floor, where it would be almost certain to pass.
In Texas, the Houston City Council voted 10-4 this week to prohibit sexual orientation discrimination in city employment. The Houston City Council had enacted an identical ordinance in 1984, only to have it struck down by a ballot initiative the following year. That's not likely to happen again, as recent polls show some 57% of Houston residents support gay and lesbian civil rights. In 1998, Houston Mayor Lee Brown issued an executive order protecting city workers from sexual orientation discrimination, an order which recently survived a legal challenge.
Malaysia's estimated 50,000 transsexuals this week were denied the chance to be recognized in their self-identified gender. Earlier this year, Malaysia's Minister for Women and Family Development, Shahrizad Abdul Jalil, had responded sympathetically to male-to-female transsexuals' request to be legally identified as women. The trans women said their male identity cards kept them from getting jobs, forcing them into prostitution. But this week, Malaysia's Minister for Religious Matters, Hamid Zainal Abidin, took the opposite position, that legally recognizing them as women would encourage their entry into sex work. Hamid said, "The request cannot be entertained as it is clearly against Islamic beliefs and teachings. However, we will try to address the problem by having counseling classes for them to realize they are really men."
A transgender in Cyprus who'd been convicted of fraud won a conditional pardon last week when prison authorities couldn't decide whether to place her with men or women. Pardoned was Alexia Angelodimou, described as a cross-dresser whose legal birth name is Marios. Cyprus Attorney General Alikos Markidis cited the public interest in issuing the pardon, but warned that Angelodimou would have to serve out her sentence if she breaks the law again.
Chuck Benazzo, the bass player for the rock band Styx, publicly announced this week that he's a gay man with HIV. His public statement came in conjunction with his appearance at a human rights campaign event in his hometown of Chicago. He'll be working with that group's National Coming Out Project. Benazzo said, "Coming out has really set my spirit free. I'm in a better place than I've ever been in my life, and it's all because I acknowledged who I am and said I want to live my life as an openly gay man." Styx once scored 4 consecutive quadruple platinum albums, with hits including Lady, Come Sail Away, Babe, Mr. Roboto, and Show Me the Way.
And finally, open gay Brian Dowling this week won Britain's latest edition of the reality TV series Big Brother. Irish-born airline steward Dowling won £70,000 as Big Brother's first openly gay or lesbian winner in any of its editions around the world. Big Brother producer Endemol had already offered him, win or lose, a £100,000 contract to co-host the popular Big Breakfast TV talk show. what's reportedly Britain's biggest telephone poll to date decided between the two finalists, with Dowling taking a landslide 62% of the 6.8 million votes. Among Dowling's supporters were openly gay entertainers Elton John and Graham Norton, with comic Norton describing the witty Dowling as his long-lost twin brother. But Dowling's most notable cheerleader was the tabloid Daily Mirror newspaper, while its rival Sun backed his opponent. The Mirror ran a front-page headline, "We Come Out for Brian," and told readers, "Go on, make Brian the queen of Big Brother."
That's News Wrap for the week ending July 28, 2001. Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm Brian Nunes.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
If I could stand beside myself, would I see me or maybe someone else? 'Cause it's hard to please most everyone when your spirit's got you on the run.
In honor of Styx bass player Chuck Panozzo's coming out this week, that was an abbreviated version of I'm OK from the group's mega-selling 1978 album Pieces of Eight. Later in the program, we'll get an update on one of several marriage rights lawsuits filed by Canadian activists. But first, a Kentucky judge's decision in a job discrimination lawsuit this week is seen as a portent of trouble to come if the current version of the Bush administration's so-called faith-based initiative becomes law. The case of lesbian Alicia Pedrera, a therapist fired by the state-funded Kentucky Baptist Homes for Children, is a perfect example of what activists fear will happen across the country if federal funding becomes available to religious organizations that offer social services. Pedrera described the events leading up to her lawsuit during an interview with Amy Goodman on Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now!
Alicia, can you tell us what happened?
I was hired by Kentucky Baptist Homes for Children in 98, and in my interview I disclosed that I was, in my second interview I disclosed that I was gay, and I was a lesbian, and if that was a problem, not to be hired. It was discussed between my future boss and his boss, and they did tell me that if this were to be found out above those two peers, that there could be problems. And they gave me examples, such as other things that were problems as well in that agency, things like having another religion, like a Buddhist, or living with somebody out of wedlock, or having a Jewish husband or Jewish wife, etc. All of these things were problematic, and they definitely said that being found out would be a problem if it should come out. So 6 months later, my photograph appeared at the Kentucky Fair photo contest that they open up to the public. It's just amateurs, and my photo had been taken the year previously at the AIDS walk. It's posted on the internet now, so you can pretty much see the photograph. It's a portrait of me and my then girlfriend sitting behind me, and I was wearing a shirt that said "Isle of Lesbos." It's a picture of the Aegean Sea, an arrow pointing to the Isle of Lesbos, and that's what it said on it. The combination of that photograph and my girlfriend being with me pretty much made it clear that I was gay. Lots and lots of people go to the fair, and lots of people saw that photograph. Somehow it got back to the central office and the vice president and the president. Then a week later, after the fair, I believe, ended, I got the first phone call that there had been a complaint, and then it started to snowball from there. I think there were seven vice presidents and president all got together and asked for my resignation, which I declined to give, because I think mostly because I had been honest from the beginning and told them, and I felt that I didn't hide anything, I didn't lie, and I didn't feel like I should walk away with my tail between my legs, so to speak, as if I had done something wrong when I hadn't. So I declined to give my resignation, and I just said, no, you'll have to fire me. And in the course of time, that's what happened.
And when they asked for your resignation, did they explain why they wanted you out?
As a matter of fact, I asked for a letter of explaining, and I was declined that letter twice by the president. At the end, the very last day, on a blank piece of paper, a white piece of paper, not a letterhead, I was given a statement that basically said that my being homosexual was against their Christian values, core values of Kentucky Baptist Homes, and it was like two lines. And it wasn't even signed. I went back and had it initialed by one of the vice presidents. So that was the total explanation.
That was Alicia Pedrera, who explained the background of her case to Pacifica Radio's Amy Goodman prior to the July 23rd ruling against her. The American Civil Liberties Union had taken on Pedrera's lawsuit, challenging both her termination and the Kentucky Baptist Homes for Children's use of state funds for religious purposes. U.S. District Judge Charles Simpson III threw out the claim that Pedrera's firing constituted religious discrimination, saying that the state of Kentucky's civil rights statutes protect religious freedom, not personal lifestyle choices. ACLU Legislative Counsel Christopher Anders sees the decision as a clear sign that the Bush administration's faith-based social service plan will result in government-funded discrimination. Indeed, that was the concern raised by critics of the Bush proposal on Capitol Hill, especially when it became known that the Salvation Army had lobbied the administration to add a clause exempting federally funded religious organizations from state and local laws banning employment discrimination against gays and lesbians. The uproar led to a delay, but the Republican-dominated House ultimately passed the bill a week before the decision against Pedrera. There's more resistance to the Bush plan in the Democrat-controlled Senate, and there were hints this week that Bush may be willing to drop the controversial provision that would allow anti-gay discrimination in order to get his overall bill through both houses of Congress. And although the court dismissed all of the employment-related claims in the Pedrera case, Judge Simpson left intact claims that the Kentucky Baptist Homes for Children promotes specific activities, such as attendance at Baptist religious services, informal religious training, and indoctrination of Baptist Christian values, indicating that religion is a primary force in the program. The ACLU can choose to go to trial on those remaining constitutional points immediately and appeal the job discrimination ruling in the meantime, or wait for an appeal on the dismissed claims before proceeding. They may also choose to drop the employment-related claims altogether. That decision is expected in a few weeks.
Oh, the sun shines bright on my old Kentucky home, and the young folks roll on the floor. Oh, the sun shines bright on my old Kentucky home. Keep them hard times away from my door.
Hi, I'm Amanda Burst, Marcy Darcy from Married with Children, and you're listening to This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. Stay tuned.
It's been just over a year since the former Attorney General of British Columbia filed suit against the Canadian federal government over same-gender marriages. Attorney General Andrew Petter was responding to the highly publicized request for a marriage license from a lesbian couple in Victoria. Rather than refuse the request, Petter chose to fight alongside them for their right to obtain a license. On the same day as the provincial government filed suit, so did Canada's national queer rights lobbying group, EGAL. A lot has changed in the past year. Victoria lesbian couples Cynthia Callahan and Judy Lightwater withdrew from the court case and held their own marriage ceremony last July. BC's queer-positive New Democratic Party government was trounced in an election a few months ago, and the new Liberal Party Attorney General, saying the province doesn't want to be in the position of suing the federal government, has withdrawn their participation in the case, allowing the evidence submitted by the previous administration, however, to remain part of the court's record. In the meantime, a total of 8 couples have signed on to the case, and on July 23rd, a 9-day hearing began before the British Columbia Supreme Court. Queer FM's Heather Kitching has more.
The court is hearing arguments from a group called the BC Partners, who represent 3 of the couples in the case, and from Canada's national queer rights lobby group, EGAL, who represent the other 5. 2 religious groups have intervened in opposition to same-sex marriage, the BC Coalition for Marriage and the Family, and the Interfaith Coalition. Cynthia Peterson, one of the lawyers for EGAL, was the first to present arguments this week.
Basically, we have 2 different arguments. The first argument, essentially what we're saying is that if there is a rule against same-sex marriage in Canada, and we actually think there is no rule, there's certainly no law ever passed by Parliament. There's some cases where judges in lower courts in Canada have said that gays and lesbians can't marry, but we think they're wrongly decided, and we'll be making that position to the court. But if there is a rule, it's a rule that's been made by judges. It's what lawyers call common law, not statute law, not something enacted by a legislature or by Parliament. And so if a judge makes a rule, a judge has a power to change a rule. And there are cases from the Supreme Court of Canada that say that the common law has to evolve over time. It has to stay current, and it has to reflect charter values as well. It's not a question so much of people's charter rights and freedoms, but the values that underlie the charter, things like liberty, individual liberty, respect for different group identification, respect for people's inherent dignity. So we will be arguing that if judges made a rule that says same-sex people can't marry, judges should unmake that rule. And that's our first argument. If the court doesn't accept that argument, we have a second argument based on the charter. And that's based mostly on Section 15 of the charter, which is the equality rights section. We're arguing that the equality rights of gays and lesbians are guaranteed by the charter, and that if the common law prevents gays and lesbians from accessing marriage, from having the freedom to choose whether or not they want to marry their same-sex partner, then that's an infringement of their charter equality rights.
The Canadian government began their arguments in the case on Friday. Judith Bowers heads up their team of lawyers.
The Attorney General of Canada is saying that the definition of marriage is a union between one man and one woman to the exclusion of all others. That's a definition that has existed in law for many years, and one that the federal government has defended in court, the courts have upheld, and it's been recently confirmed in Parliament.
One of the things that they're saying is that marriage has been heterosexual. We say we don't believe that's really true, but even if it were true, just because something's been done for a really long time doesn't make it okay. In fact, sometimes the pedigree of discrimination can make it worse. Slavery, miscegenation statutes that prohibited interracial marriage in the U.S. were all justified on the same basis. When they were first challenged in the courts in the 19th century and early 20th century, the governments there that were trying to uphold laws with respect to slavery, with respect to miscegenation statutes, said, oh, but, you know, the races are just meant to be separate, and it just always has been that way, and it's unthinkable to do it any other way. I mean, these are not arguments, really, that justify discrimination.
The BC Partners argued their case on Wednesday and Thursday, expanding on EGAL's case on a couple of fronts. First, the partners argue that our relationships with each other are what make us human. So when the government denies any kind of relationship recognition to certain groups of people based on prejudice against that group, they deny the very humanity of those people. She also argues that the inability of queers to marry violates a number of sections of the Charter of Rights, not just the equality provisions.
We've looked, for example, at Section 2, And we say that the guarantee of the right to association under the Charter includes a right to intimate association. And that's a right which has been recognized by the United States in the development in their jurisdictions with respect to same-sex marriage. And we talk about Section 7, which is the guarantee of life, liberty, and security of the person. And we say that this is a personal decision that must be protected by the state. And we look at Section 28, which this is the neat one, where it says everything in the Constitution is guaranteed equally to men and women.
The judge's decision in this case may not come down for several months, and that decision will most certainly be appealed all the way to the Supreme Court of Canada, where it's anticipated that a number of similar cases from across the country will be combined into one hearing. The entire process could take at least 5 years, but it's a battle many believe will ultimately be successful. Same-sex couples have already obtained the same rights as heterosexual common law couples under federal law, which in turn gives them virtually all the same rights as married couples. In addition, more than half the provinces in the country have amended their provincial laws to the same effect. A 1999 ruling from the Supreme Court of Canada required all governments to provide equal recognition to same-sex couples as to common law heterosexual couples, so the remaining provinces are expected to follow suit. A win in the marriage case, therefore, will have few tangible benefits for queer couples, but the symbolism is of utmost importance, as John Fisher of EGAL explains.
Certainly for the gay couples who want to marry, it's about affirming their love and celebrating their relationships on equal terms with heterosexuals. For EGAL, it's about the message that's sent by our exclusion. I think each time there's a step forward, it becomes that much on equality rights for lesbians, gays, bisexual, and transgender people, it becomes that much easier for our youth struggling to come out to recognize that this is a society that welcomes them as equal participants. And I think that that journey benefits us all.
For This Way Out, I'm Heather Kitching in Vancouver.
The next step in the same-gender marriage struggle in Canada will likely come in November, when an Ontario court is scheduled to hear several challenges brought by groups in Toronto. Among them is the Lesbian and Gay Affirming Metropolitan Community Church of Toronto, which argues that the provincial government is violating its religious freedom by refusing to recognize the same-gender marriages it performs. Toronto MCC generated a great deal of attention in January when the Reverend Brent Hawkes married a gay and a lesbian couple using the ancient ritual of the publication of banns. Under Ontario law, the religious ritual is considered a legal alternative to obtaining a marriage license, but the government has refused to register the two marriages performed. This Way Out will continue to monitor these cases. Thanks for tuning into This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Cindy Friedman, Brian Nunes, Graham Underhill, Chris Ambidge, Jason Lynn, Rex Walkner, and Heather Kitching contributed program material. Thanks also to Amy Goodman and Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! Randy Newman performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can also hear This Way Out anytime online, exclusively on Planet Out. Just point your browser to www.planetout.com and click first on Multimedia, then on Radio. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded through designated contributions by Uncommon Clout Visa card holders who've chosen This Way Out and through direct charitable donations from our listeners around the world. For an urgent message about This Way Out's critical financial situation, please visit our webpage at thiswayout.org, email us at tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Lucia Chappelle and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on 7THE Hobart, Tasmania, KUCR Riverside, California, WCSB Cleveland, Ohio, and more than 125 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Everybody's going to stay tuned.